Well, hello everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I've got Steven sitting in the background right now. He's going to join us a little bit later. And I'm going to start out by talking about the New World Order today, and particularly from a book called The Story of the Committee of the 300 by Dr. John Coleman. Then I'm going to get back into the Meyer information in his great book, The Might of Thoughts, and we're going to talk about the two personalities in every human being, then the creational natural laws, and finally, I'll talk about what Billy discusses as the creation. So let's start out with the goals of the New World Order. And I'm sure you've heard this term. And if you look at the news today, you see some very strange things. We see the left getting more and more extreme. Particularly, the left is now the Democratic Party, I guess you would say, in some ways. But people are leaving the left because it's getting more and more extreme. Well, if you listen to people like Dr. John Coleman, he'll tell you that there's something called the Committee of 300. And the Committee of 300 is what is really in control of our world. We think we elect presidents, which we kind of do, but really behind it all is this secret group. And in Billy's writings, he calls it the secret dark order in his book called The Goblet of Truth. And it's the Committee of 300 that secretly controls most of what happens. They stay in the background, and there's this chain of command in the New World Order. It's, first of all, it's the Committee of 300, it's these 300 people, entities, organizations. They send a directive down to what's called the Royal Institute of International Affairs. And if it passes them, then it goes down to Wall Street, and where the Morgan Guarantee and Trust Bank, I think it is, that picks that up in Wall Street. And eventually it goes down to the Secretary of State in the United States, which is a guy named Mike Pompeo. And then that gets sent on to the president. So allegedly, according to this model of Dr. John Coleman, Trump is getting his quote-unquote orders from the Committee of 300. Now, the Committee of 300 also encompasses organizations like the Club of Rome. And the Club of Rome was founded in 1968, and it meets in Rome, Italy, and it consists of former heads of states, UN bureaucrats, high-level politicians, scientists, economists, etc., etc. One of the things that the Club of Rome has said is that the middle class in the United States had to be destroyed. And I think Trump is fighting against that. That's why he's so unpopular, at least according to the left. And the left controls the media. So if you listen to CNN, you're listening to the Committee of the 300, you're listening to the New World Order, you're listening to the deep state. And Trump has tried to build up the middle class, and it's worked pretty well so far. But before Trump got here, there were certain things like NAFTA and GATT, which were designed to destroy the middle class, because they don't want a strong United States, because they don't want nation states. They want a one world government. And so they attacked all the steel mills in the United States and tried to destroy that whole industry. Now, that's not to say that the Committee of Rome or the Committee of 300 or the Club of Rome is completely evil and completely wrong. One of the things they try to struggle against is this overpopulation. And I know that many people would argue that there is not a population problem. But let me give you a couple examples. I mean, if you just look at the human population and how much space it takes to live, it doesn't. People say, well, you could fit everybody into Texas, which you can do. But if you start keeping track of what it takes to feed people, and if people are going to have cars and fly in airplanes and things, and let me give you an example. Let's just take a look at beef real quick. I know I talk about this a lot on the show for people that have listened to me before, but I think it's important. Right now, there are 7 billion people on the earth, according to estimates. There's probably closer to 9 billion, but let's just say there's 7 billion people. And if we give every person a cow for their food, a steer weighs about 1,200 pounds, and that produces about 500 pounds of meat. So if you live 100 years and you only eat 5 pounds of beef a year, that's 500 pounds of beef. That's your one cow you've eaten, your allotment of beef. Say we create a world where everyone gets to eat beef, for example. If you live 50 years, you could eat 10 pounds of beef a year, which still isn't very much. That's only a pound, a little less than a pound a month. This is not a lot of beef. We say, well, what are you trying to get to? Well, if you maintain a population of 7 billion cows for your 7 billion people, in order to graze those 7 billion cows in a way that's healthy, you're going to have to give them 2 acres per cow. And if you're going to have grass-fed beef, that's 14 billion acres. That's 21 million square miles just to feed the cows to support a world population of 7 billion people. Assuming that everyone's treated the same and everyone gets the same amount of food. Now, what's happening now is we only have about a billion people, probably less than a billion people, that actually eat meat on a regular basis. But you see, that demographic is changing. So we're in a situation where overpopulation is spiraling exponentially out of control. And this is causing huge problems. This is why we're having this gigantic migration from the South America. So anyway, the Club of Rome has seen this, and they recognize these problems. So they tried to create something to stop this overpopulation situation. And they created what they called the Lassa fever virus. It was so deadly. And they tried to release it in certain areas in Africa and Brazil, but they had to completely burn those areas. They probably used some kind of fuel air explosives to actually burn up those areas. So that didn't work. And then they've tried to create AIDS, and they haven't really had that much luck with trying to control the world population. But this, I just want to more or less expose people to this information while I'm learning it, and we can kind of learn together. So anyway, just to let you know about the history of the Committee of 300 or the New World Order, they had Lincoln assassinated way back then. So they were around for a long, they've been around a long time, a very, very long time. Dr. John Coleman says that our presidents are selected, not really elected. And there was a guy named Jimmy Carter who had several mental breakdowns. And the Committee of 300 said he would be a great person to have as a president of the United States. So they selected this man, and they go through this whole, I don't want to call it a charade of an election, because I'm not sure how much of it is manipulated, how much is real, and how much is not. But Jimmy Carter had 3 mental breakdowns, and because of that, they thought he would be easy to control. So anyway, the first goal of this Committee of 300 is to create a one-world government, which is what they're struggling to do. Second goal of the elite is the destruction of the national identity and the national pride, and that's why you hear the left chant, "No borders, no walls, no USA at all." That's why we have Antifa chanting death to America. That's why the leftist billionaire George Soros is funding the caravan invasion that's coming in from Central America. As I said before, the third goal of the New World Order or the Committee of 300 is to destroy the middle class. The fourth is to control the mind of the masses. And this is where an organization called the Tavistock Institute comes in to play here. The Tavistock Institute, through music, has had a tremendous impact on the thoughts of the people of the world. And there was supposedly a guy named Theodore Adorno, who was for a while ahead of the Tavistock Institute in the music area. And he created something called 12-tone atonal music, which really creates, if you ever listen to it, a sense of, I don't know what the word is. You know the feeling you get when something bad is about to happen? That's the sense that you get when you listen to 12-tone atonal music. And they actually introduced it into the music of the Beatles. So they had this very nice music, and then they put in the center of it sometimes this 12-tone atonal music. And this is how they would communicate to the subconscious of the masses. So one of the things that the Tavistock Institute wants to do is to mind control the world. And there was a guy named Zbigniew Brzezinski who talked about that they wanted to establish control of every person in the world through mind control. And now we see Elon Musk with the Neuralink already, which is that they drill a hole in your brain, insert a chip. They drill a hole in your skull, insert a chip into your brain, put a wireless device behind your ear, and they will feed you information from the cloud. And what that's going to do is basically take your free will away, program your mind. So anyway, this is the New World Order, and it's the way the elite are creating a tyranny over human consciousness. And Billy talks about this in The Goblet of Truth. He says it was in particular the Roman Catholic Church that inherited the practices of the inhuman Roman Imperium, establishing an evil consciousness conditioned tyranny in the place of the former Roman military tyranny, which reached its accumulation in the Inquisition, but has continued uninterrupted since then, even in a reduced form. So, remember what Billy says here. They're establishing an evil consciousness-conditioned tyranny. So they're conditioning our consciousness to think a certain way. The tyranny of the New World Order appears as a political correctness. They are working to take away our rights of self-determination. We have been born into kind of a prison. And Billy calls it a consciousness-conditioned tyranny. So, and they're conditioning our minds, and we're becoming trained or accustomed to behave in a certain way and to accept certain circumstances. So political correctness is the avoidance, often considered as taken to extremes, of forms of expression or action that are perceived to exclude, marginalize, or insult groups of people. And this political correctness is destroying our ability to communicate accurately. So many conservative voices today are being removed from YouTube and big tech operations like Twitter. And the seventh goal of the ruling class is to merge mankind with machines. In fact, the elites say humanity is obsolete, and they want to bring in the age of transhumanism. So that's the New World Order. I wanted to just cover that for 15 minutes. It's kind of dark, but it's what's happening. So, and probably the main goal of the New World Order is to destroy your morale, to weaken your psychological defenses. So that's the good thing about all of this is that when we study the Meyer information, we learn how to strengthen our defenses, our psychological defenses. So every human being has two personalities. And this is from the Might of Thoughts book, page 388. So every human being has two personalities. Two personalities live in the human being during your life. One is called the inner nature, the ego. And the other one is called sometimes the creational I, or the innermost creational nature. So when the sperm fertilizes the egg in the womb of the woman, it takes 21 days for the spirit form, which is one of those personalities. It's the real you. It's the part of you that never dies. The spirit form comes out of the spirit realm, and it brings with it a new material consciousness. And the spirit form goes into the fetus, the tiny little fetus, that's only 21 days old, and it goes into an area of the middle brain called the superior colliculus. And this energy builds a lattice structure all over the body of the fetus. It goes everywhere. And the heart starts to beat. So it's the energy of the spirit form which brings in life. Now the spirit form is called the Geist form in the German. And it's called a fragment or a telstock of the universal creation. So our universe, the creation as it's called in the Meyer information, is an intelligence. And each human, in fact every animal and every plant, is born and has a fragment of the creation in it. Now the human being has a different consciousness, of course, than many other creatures. And when the Geist form enters into the superior colliculus, it also brings with it something called the psyche, which is also known as the material consciousness. Then the material consciousness goes into, typically I believe, the frontal lobe of this child. And it's a new material consciousness. The spirit form always survives, always continues. But with each lifetime, the human being gets a new material consciousness and has to learn to walk again. It has to learn to talk again. It has to learn to control its emotions, to control its bodily functions. And this material consciousness will develop a personality or an inner nature or an ego. Now the ego, the inner nature, is almost opposed to the spirit form in some ways. By its nature, it's always demanding, it's calculating, it's hysterical, it's garrulous, very loud, and it's equipped with things called unvalues, which guarantee the human being a way of life according to your own will. And these unvalues are, well, eventually, if you live by them, will turn you into a psychopath or a sociopath. Now, to offset this, there are impulses which come from the spirit form, and these impulses are of a neutral positive nature. They're exactly like the universal consciousness. They're always neutral positive, and they're direction determining. So when these impulses come from the innermost creational nature, the ego, the inner nature, has the opportunity to listen to these quiet impulses of wisdom. Now, most of the time, people don't listen to these direction-determining impulsations. But if you, for example, like study this material, you'll start to develop a skill to listen to these impulses. And the creational eye, which I've been talking about, which is related to your spirit form, is of a purely spiritual nature. And it sends these quiet impulses of wisdom to your ego, and their direction determining. Now, what is an impulse? An impulse can be a sudden, strong desire to act, to do something. You can also think of an impulse as a signal. So this Geist form, this spirit form, is sending signals to this, for example, in the case of something that's still growing in the womb, to this brain, which is just beginning. So you can think of it as you have a part of you, even if, for example, the material consciousness grows up to be a serial killer, okay, a rapist, a murderer, horrible, it's not listening to any of these impulses, but still that spirit form is completely neutral. It's neutral positive. And it functions the same way as the creation, even though it has a terrible conduct. Now, there is something called the conduct of life, which in the German is called the Lebensführung. So one of the points of the material life is to bring the material consciousness into sync with the spiritual consciousness. And then that'll help your evolution. So you have a character pattern that you're developing. And your innermost personality, your creational eye, should be the guide for your ego or the inner personality. Now, if you don't listen to these quiet impulses, you know, maybe you've never heard of anything of this. This is all new material, or you haven't been very good at following your intuition. You're always listening to your ego, okay? Well, if you do that, you'll develop what are called unvalues. And in the Figu Bulletin number 68, there's a whole list of these unvalues which are associated to the psychopathic character pattern. And a definition of unvalue would be a negative value. You could say that. So, for example, a lot of the people that are, I would say, in this new world order that I first started talking about at the beginning of the show are living according to what we would call unvalues. And you might consider them sociopathic. Now, okay. So let's talk about this a little more. We have character, that we have a personality, which is the combination of characteristics or qualities that form your specific character. You could say, for example, she had a sunny personality. She was very engaging. But you could have a completely dark personality. It just depends on are you listening to these impulses of wisdom. Now, you also have a predecessor personality. And the Meyer information talks about reincarnation and the fact that we live many, many lifetimes. And at the beginning of the show, I was talking about the spirit form coming into the body of a child. Well, that spirit form is most of the time has lived before. And the purpose of the material lifetime is to evolve your consciousness. And we all have what's called, in the German, a Vorgänger, which is a predecessor personality, a precursor, a forerunner. So we also, and that's your previous material life. So when you die, the spirit form leaves the body, and it takes the material consciousness out of the body, and it goes into this other realm. It's like an energy band around the planet. It's called the spirit realm, you could say. And there's a storage bank in the spirit realm associated to each spirit form. That's my understanding. Somebody can prove me wrong. The spirit form goes into this storage bank, and it starts to process what was learned in this previous life, and it creates these evolutive values which are absorbed by the spirit form and are programmed into the new subconscious, because part of this process is dissolving the old personality, creating these evolutive values from the previous life, programming those evolutive values to your subconscious, as well as the spirit form absorbing that. So let me read something from the Mighty Thoughts, page 390. It says, "The human being is able to distinguish the various impulses and values of the innermost nature." The innermost nature is, again, the spirit form. Let's say that. "From the self-created personality," which is your ego. "So he or she therefore learns to recognize the various forms of characteristics which on the one hand radiate as guiding impulses from his or her innermost creational nature, or which on the other hand attempt to drown out everything as various piercing, often loud and seductive voices from the self-created I." So the personality, the ego, is trying to drown out these impulses that are coming from your innermost nature. So what is this innermost creational nature? This spirit form that comes in from the spirit realm 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. It gives life to your material consciousness and your subconsciousness. It gives life to your body. It creates impulses for striving for that which is higher. And this might be a good segue into the creational natural laws. We'll do that in a second. It sends quiet impulses of wisdom that may be listened to by your inner nature. So the human being learns to pay attention to that inner nature. And this innate wisdom can be conveyed to the inner nature this way. So this is where the creational laws come in, because these creational laws, these are creational natural laws, and they help us in the physical life. They help us, they guide us. So one of these creational natural laws, and I talked about this last week, is love. And let me read something from Love Letter number 27. It says, "No life is able to exist without love and without the light of love. However, no light is able to exist without love and truth. And no truth is able to exist without light and love. True love is true being, and it is the everlasting warmth from the center of creation, which is described as true existence." So we'll talk about that a little bit later. And this is my favorite part. I've contemplated this for years. It says, love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. So there is a word in German called Schöpfung, which means creation, but there's also something called Schöpfungsprinzip, and these are these compound words in German again. The word Prinzip means principle. So the German put these two words together. So there's this principle in creation, which we call love. But I think it has a, we have a very narrow perspective on what this is. And we think of it mostly as romantic, when it's actually much higher than that. It's a much higher kind of thought. And this logic, this absolute logic of creation, functions in love. So if you look at a forest, the growth of a forest creates a habitat, a living area for animals. So there's this mutualism, this interdependence among living organisms, like a tree is the home for the bird or the squirrel or the raccoon. So they depend on that. They depend on those trees. So when a forest grows, it provides a home for various kinds of animals. Now, of course, today we always cut down the forest we have no concept of the effect that this is having. Well, the forest also moderates the weather. So when in the summertime, when it's really hot, you'll have 10, 15 degrees cooler in the forest. And this helps the animals and smaller plants, smaller trees that are growing. The older tree helps the younger tree to grow through providing shade and other things. So there's this wonderful interdependence. The bird requires the tree to make its nest. The squirrel also depends on the tree, the raccoons. When the wind blows over the tops of the trees, it creates a turbulence. And the turbulence eventually can form clouds, which will bring in moisture and cause rain, which gives other animals something to drink. So this is, when it's talking about love, it's talking about this very profound interdependence that exists in all of nature. So this is a very, very high concept. When we think of love, we always think of romance, and we make it very narrow. And this is called effective love. It's very, very stable. It's a principle of the universe that continues unless mankind interrupts it. And as I was talking about earlier, through overpopulation, we're destroying this interdependence. So mutualism, even little birds, for example, on the wildebeest in Africa will get parasites off of them and in the alligator or the crocodile's teeth, sometimes clean up the crocodile's teeth. We also have a certain kind of mutualism, or in this case, parasitism, which we don't really want. For example, you don't want a mosquito to bite your arm, but that mosquito does use your blood. It's you may not always want this kind of love, but it's a kind of interdependence. The plants and trees provide shelter, again, for birds, deer, raccoons, squirrels, even insects. Horse and deer eat the grass for food. Plants produce oxygen during photosynthesis. Animals breathe this oxygen, and we give out carbon dioxide. So that's just one creational natural law, which is love. A very long-winded description of that. The second law, the fundamental law of all evolution, is striving. There is no striving. There is no life without striving. if a lot of times when people become homeless, they have not lived according to this principle. There can be many things that you get if you don't live for, you don't have striving in your life, it will interrupt things. You'll fall into obsessions, or you'll fall into addictions. So let me read something here from page 102 of The Way to Live. Right up to the being in high, absolutely full development, striving creates the life. Right up to the being, striving means delectation, which is like pleasure or satisfaction, in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. So, the pursuit of pleasure, even though, you know, we do that, it's like the ego is constantly, you know, oh, give me more food, that's more pleasure. Whatever, you know, alcohol, gambling, people get addicted to gambling. But striving is what you should be focusing your life on. Striving, this is a creational natural law. This is the way to happiness, is through striving. But if you inhibit your striving, your evolution doesn't occur. There's a stagnation and a hopelessness and grief which comes on you. Hopelessness and grief is the byproduct many times of not striving enough. Now, there's another cause for hopelessness and grief, and this can be there's probably many, many causes of that. But one of the causes of hopelessness and grief is because we've been programmed with negativity. And so one of the things that we need to do is deprogram ourselves. And if you ever look at the work of Dr. Bruce Lipton, go out on YouTube and listen to one of his videos, and it goes hand in hand pretty well with the Meyer Spiritual Teachings in the Might of Thoughts book. So one of the things that we need to learn is how to deprogram our negativity. And there's what I would call my important things to tell myself. It's along with striving. Striving will pull you out of your grief. Striving will pull you out of your negativity. But tell yourself, say, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic. I'm the master of my own destiny, the forger of my own fortune, the creator of my own good luck. I do not allow my thoughts to drift. I steer my thoughts like a captain steers his ship. I nurture my thoughts. I strengthen my thoughts. I do not allow my thoughts to drift on a sea of conscious and unconscious intentions. I strengthen my thoughts. I clarify my thoughts. It is the nature of the thoughts that by their might alone, every conceivable thing can come to fruition. Every thought that is enlivened by might and power must, as a cause, also bring a quite certain effect. The effect of the thought is directly proportional to its might and power. That's another creational natural law that we learn in the Meyer material here. So the might of the thought is directly proportional to how much of an effect that thought has. So your consciousness is like a garden. So you need to tend your consciousness. You have to take care of it just like you would take care of your body. So you may want to memorize a few of these sayings to help pull you back into a neutral, positive way of thinking. Here's something to remember too. The negative and the positive are two forces that belong together because they depend on one another and should never be separated. So allow for a negative inclusion. Like, say, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic. I'm the master of my own destiny. I'm the forger of my own fortune. But I know that life brings its difficulties. Allow the negative inclusion to bring in a neutral positive balance. So that's what we're shooting for. This is the law of harmony, principle number 3. It's the bipolar structure of everything that exists. The positive and the negative. And the 4th creational natural law is system and order. It says that your daily life has to be structured and adhered. You have to adhere to that structure. And that has different meanings. I think every person has their own schedule, their own order, their own goals, their own to-do list. But system and order also relates, if you look at the stars and the planets tend to produce a stable orbit around their star, and the orbits in a stable system can last billions of years. And this is how creation stabilizes things and puts things in a structure. And there are more and more planets that we're discovering today that are in that habitable zone around their planet. Some of the stars, most of the stars that have possibility for life are the yellowish stars, but there's a kind of a yellow red dwarf star that they're finding more and more of these, and sometimes they can have planets that have had stable orbits for, you know, many billions of years. So there could be solar systems out there with civilizations much, much higher than ours in terms of evolution. Now, that's a little bit of speculation. The problem with the Earth is that our civilization has fallen and risen and fallen and risen many, many times based on our own stupidities and wars and naturally occurring holocausts. But there is this system and order to the universe. So we should have a system in order to our life as well. There's also a law of prosperity and abundance. Every life form and every human being has everything in plentiful abundance in order to be able to live and evolve. And this will be true if you have the law of love functioning in your life and the law of striving and the law of harmony. Even if you're stuck living on the street and you don't have a home and you have a very bad series of circumstances in your life, if you live according to the law of love and the law of striving and the law of harmony and the law of system and order, slowly the circumstances of prosperity and abundance come into your life. And there's a new little verse that I memorized today. I don't have it written down anywhere. It says something to the effect of that it must be remembered that a gloomy attitude constantly chases off prosperity and abundance. So we don't want to chase off prosperity and abundance in our life by having a gloomy attitude. In fact, we want to attract prosperity and abundance into our life through the law of love, the law of striving, the law of harmony and system and order. So that will bring the prosperity and abundance into your life. Wow. You know, I've had this strange disconnect with time today, and we're already down to the last 15 minutes of the show. And I better check with Stephen. He's probably fallen asleep by now. Stephen, are you there?
I am.
Did you have any comments, or I can just roll on?
Oh, you're doing a great job. Yeah, there's one thing I could share with you, but you're doing a great job, so it's up to you.
No, go ahead, please.
You're talking about the bond with creation type thing with the innermost eye, right? Mm-hmm. And our ego. Studying the Decalogue before the show today, one of the things was like perfect segue for this. I'll read from it. It's on page 72. It says, Therefore, you shall not be breaking the bond with creation. The bond with it, however, is a bond of the marriage. So it also means you should not commit adultery. This bond of marriage, however, means to you that you live as one with the creation. Okay. And it says, that's to say, the two powers are working within one another and thereby are one in all their activities, doings, transforming, and deeds. This means marriage in the true value. However, if you do not strive to keep this recommendation-based bond with the creation, which is to you the second and at the same time the first power, then you will be adulterous, and your desire within you for the creation, its love, its knowledge, its truth and wisdom, dwindles away uncontrollably. So if we think about that bond with creation, right, like, you know, we've heard of the Ten Commandments, but this, that was kind of a change of what this original one meant. So the higher order is, if you look at it as a marriage, right? And if I separate myself from my innermost eye, I go into darkness. You know, I'm without that light. Just like a marriage, you know. So I thought it goes perfectly with this as a good way for people to kind of understand it in a real sense, you know, like marriage.
That's a great way to look at it. There is also a, I don't know if, I'm scanning my notes here trying to see if I find it, but there is a, it talks about becoming a stranger to yourself, or something along those lines. And I was just trying to see if I had created, I was looking, I have like a table of contents that I've
created. That makes sense, you know, a stranger to yourself and the fact that you've walked away from your innermost self, right?
Yeah. So, and I'm not finding it right here at the moment, but I'll, let me just continue to search. And well, you also can become estranged, not only from yourself, but from the facts of life. That's quite interesting. Yeah, that is very, very interesting. And I remember covering in the notes here something about unsatisfaction. It can promote divorce. It can lead to a divorce. So, you know, we always talk about inner conflicts is another example of squandering of our energies. We squander our energies and we lose our initiative. And that's another one of these unsatisfaction things that come. Okay, here it is. And your inner self, you become tired of, deep in their inner selves, they become tired of themselves, increasingly arriving at the dangerous abyss of despair. They literally get on their own nerves and become bored with their insufficient, stupid, illogical, anti-life imagination of themselves. You know, that's a whole area they could probably do a whole show on. If we can remember this idea, and the, you know, the unsatisfaction, and somehow we become strangers to ourselves. I don't know if that's the word he uses, but you come alienated to yourself.
Your true self, right?
Right. Self-aversion. Okay. Here's another one of the things. Duh. I probably covered this last week. It shows you how much more I need to repeat this stuff. Okay. Know that a hidden in unsatisfaction is also an aversion which must be neutralized to one's own personality. So when you're having, we're running out of time. When you're having unsatisfaction, part of this is a self-aversion. And I did not realize this. So let me continue here. What is an aversion? It's a strong feeling of dislike, opposition, repugnance, antipathy, a strong aversion you can have to spiders and snakes, but let me continue. Okay. The cause lies in the completely absent or extremely defective knowledge of one's own eye. So we get to know ourselves and we discover the impulses that are coming from the inner nature, or we become kind of, I don't know if estranged is the right word,
Well, you're focused on nothing but the physical world that we're in.
Yeah.
Material life, right?
Yeah. So we get somehow into this self-aversion. So we literally get to where we dislike ourselves in a way. So that's where, I guess, a real profound depression can come in. So, okay, let me read in page 282. Got about 5 minutes here. If the human gets to know himself, then he or she discovers impulses in his innermost creational nature, by means of which she achieves qualities in his or her consciousness that were unknown to him or her until then. And I remember, you know, it seems like we're going to a whole nother level on understanding this book, because we're getting so many practical things. And I remember when I was studying selfishness and immoderateness, it talked about how clear thinking and methodical planning go away if our thoughts become controlled by this selfishness, this immoderateness. Mm-hmm. And then we stumbled across the fact that the seven virtues of the human being and the Geistes layer, and the fact that number one on the list was moderation, you know, to have a sense of moderation in your life. And boy, there's a lot of unmoderation. You know, I don't know if you ever watched the bodybuilding world. You know, it's Mr. Olympia weekend. I don't know if you're noticed that. Have you ever seen those guys?
Oh, man, yeah.
They're so absolutely humongous. And then they go on these unbelievable diets where they lose all the body fat. You know, so you got this like 270-pound guy of muscle. And he's all the body fat's gone. And, you know, they go to such extremes. I mean, we could talk about their quote-unquote supplement programs. I mean, they do everything to achieve that. And it's very hard. And then another extreme sport. What about cage fighting? What about the UFC? You know, those guys go in there and they beat themselves to death. There's another example of extreme. We have a society, and I think our music is becoming extreme. So, wow, you know, what our population has become extreme. Was that the music?
It was, yeah.
Okay, folks, sorry about that. I'm only going an hour tonight. I got some things going on, and thanks, Steve. We're studying the Meyer material. Order one of these books. Contact Michael Horn if you have to. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.